The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio, the official podcast of RedLegNation.com.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is Bill Lack, and we've got our special guest, our good old friend Chris Welsh, with us tonight. Thanks for coming on, Chris. How you doing?
My pleasure, Bill. I'm doing very well. Just a couple of days from opening day. I can't do any better than that.
Okay, Chris, let's jump right into the hottest topic of spring training, the Aroldis Chapman decision. Do you agree with the Reds' decision or not, and why or why not?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at it, Bill, and the one way, of course, is the sabermetrics view, is that you get your best pitching arm and you get as many innings out of them as possible. But I think ultimately the Reds made the right decision based on what they wanted to do this year. They feel like this team's ready to win. That there was nothing broken in Chapman in the bullpen. Would he be a starter and better starter? Really, nobody knows that. I mean, potentially, yes, but I think that had it begun to unravel for Aroldis Chapman as a starter, it would have begun to unravel for Dusty Baker. It would have unraveled the bullpen a little bit more and so on, and I think this was the easiest way to get W's on the board.
All winter, Chris, that you know, Walt Jocketty talked about him being a starter. Brian Price said he was going to be a starter. He said, you know, that they had a plan for the inning shortage, and he threw fairly well in spring training. What do you think made them change their minds?
Well, Aroldis Chapman saying he'd rather be in the bullpen. I'm really stunned, actually, that the Reds didn't take the time ahead of time to talk to Aroldis Chapman and find out, first of all, how he really felt, number one. Then number two, advised him that this would come up in the media eventually, and that if he was asked, you want to be a starter or reliever, and you tell us in January you want to be a starter, don't tell the media in March that you want to be a reliever, because then it makes it look like there's a big disagreement between the manager and the general manager, and it looks like they don't have a plan and so on. I think the one thing that really hurt Aroldis Chapman from his ability to make it over as a starter this year was he was not able to go down and pitch in fall ball. That was the original plan, if you remember. And they didn't feel like his arm was up to it, so they didn't make him pitch in fall ball as a starter. That would have given him an edge up. I'm not so sure that the spring training would have been enough for him. And even if he had been a starter, you're only looking at getting, 140, 150 innings out of him. And then what the pitch counts were would also be a consideration. So I think that it could have been probably planned out a little bit better, so there wouldn't have been, the sensational news by Aroldis Chapman in the middle of spring training that he would rather be in the bullpen.
Don't you think, though, that also that this was handled badly by the Reds front office? I mean, Jocketty says the plan's for Chapman to start. Price says there's a plan, and Dusty Baker's pretty vocal in the media that he doesn't think it's the right idea. And it makes it look like that there's a problem between the dynamic between Dusty Baker and Walt Jocketty also, don't you think?
It does make it look like that. It's not unusual to have, the field manager docking against the general manager because everybody has a difference of opinion in this game. But I think it could have been handled better from the beginning. And just avoided this whole thing. I mean, I was under the impression, like you were, that he was going to be a starter, period. Everything that I read, everybody I talked to, everything I'd heard was that Aroldis Chapman was being groomed as a starter, like it or not like it. And then all of a sudden, it's under consideration again. So even at that point, Dusty Baker must have felt like he had made his point to Walt Jocketty. And then, of course, I think Chapman voicing in the media that he wanted to be a reliever was the tipping point.
So you don't think this is any evidence of a real friction between Baker and Jocketty, or that Baker has the ear of the ownership more than Jocketty does, or anything like that?
I don't think so. No, I don't want to make it any bigger than it probably is. The concerns is one thing. I mean, this ball club right now is just, it looks too good to start letting something internal like that begin to, you know, dissolve you from inside out. I don't think that there is a big problem between Jacquet and Baker. If there is, you know, too bad. They've got to work together anyway. I mean, they've got a common goal. It doesn't mean you have to get along. There have been plenty of instances in baseball where there have been championship teams built when the GM and the manager didn't see eye to eye, but nonetheless they went out and worked for a common goal, which was to win games.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, the movie Moneyball, how much of it was fictionalized and how much of it was true, I don't know, but it was very clear, at least in the movie version, that Billy Bean and Art Howe were at cross purposes and cross beliefs, you know, in that case.
It's interesting you bring that up, because the whole idea, I think, of putting Chapman in the starting rotation is an extension of Moneyball. I think you'd have a hard time finding uniformed personnel in the Reds camp that really thought that Chapman would be better off this year in the rotation than the bullpen. But I think that there are a lot of people who never wore a uniform that really think, hey, this is the best arm, you get the most innings out of him, and, you know, that's the way you max his you know, value to the ball club. And I can see both those sides, but I think what we lose track of a lot is that this is still a game played by human beings. And you can crunch the numbers all you want, but the bottom line is that you've got a guy out there with emotion, with confidence or lack of confidence, biorhythms, good days, bad days, all sorts of things. And that's the bottom line. It's humans versus humans.
The local free magazine, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, the City Beat, I think it was, did an article on Chapman. And he didn't come off looking like a very mature young man or one that really has his real head together. Do you think something like this could have went into the Reds' decision-making process also, his emotional maturity?
I don't think that they read City Beat, to be honest with you, but I do. That I think it's actually a pretty cool magazine. I missed that article. It would be interesting to know how they got to know Chapman enough to be able to get that kind of a... again, Bill, it goes back to the basic thing that you've got human beings, and one of the things that Dusty Baker does, and I'm not so sure he gets a lot of credit for, is that he really handles interpersonal relationships as well as anybody I've ever seen. And he gets to know his players, and he knows their strengths, he knows when, you know, they're not feeling right, he knows when they've got an issue at home, he knows when they're breaking up with their girlfriends, and so on and so forth. And I think that players appreciate that, and I think he's got that sixth sense that can help him. And I think that he sensed that Chapman didn't want to go out there and be a starter and get knocked around and then be frustrated. Look at it this way. Chapman comes in from the bullpen, and when he gets in trouble in the one-inning situation, what does he do? He does what he comes naturally does, and that is rear back and try to throw harder. As a starter, you can't do that very often. I mean, there aren't too many guys who can actually throw harder when they want to. And I think that Chapman, as a starter, you're going to go out there, you're going to get beat up. You're going to have a couple bad starts back-to-back. It's going to be frustrating. People are going to wonder if it was the right decision or not. And I think that he took the easiest way out and the way that he wants to have the most success. Coming out of the bullpen, the guy feels bulletproof. As a starter, I don't think that's the case.
Okay, let's move on to something else, Chris. Let's talk about the value of a closer. Do you think it's overemphasized in today's game?
Well, you know, yes and no. I think that when you start giving closers really long-term deals for a lot of money, you'll probably find out that there's maybe two or three other guys on the ball club that can do pretty close to the same job that he did. I thought an interesting stat was Chapman's numbers last year as they related to Francisco Cordero's numbers and his last year. I think they were both 38 for 43 in save opportunities. So, I mean, Chapman didn't make you, you know, bite your knuckles down to the, or bite your fingernails down to the bone, but, you know, bottom line was bottom line. So, yeah, I think to some extent closers are not used the way they should be used. I think that if I was managing, I would probably use them more in a crucial time of the game. Might be the seventh inning, might be the eighth inning. You know, I'm not automatically going to bring a closer in with a three-run lead in the ninth inning just so he can rack up enough to save. I think that's ridiculous. But I see managers do it every day, and it's almost like they're forced to do that because of the agents involved in the game. A lot of other things are going on. You know, you got personal accolades for the player. I mean, you want your pitcher to have the most saves in the league, right? So you put him out there every chance he gets a save. Well, that's not necessarily for the betterment of the ball club, but it certainly helps the player.
Yeah, in fact, I think John Fay wrote something along these same lines in an article a couple of weeks ago where he asked, right after this decision was announced about Chapman, he asked Dusty about, you know, the opening series. You know, would he use Chapman in a seventh or eighth inning if he was coming up against Solomon and Hamilton and Pujols, or would he save him for the ninth? And he said he'd save him for the ninth, you know, so I think that's kind of what we're talking about.
It's kind of the way of the game right now. I mean, the one luxury that Dusty Baker has, a lot of other managers don't, is that you have some other shutdown relievers in that bullpen. And, whether you want to say it's Sean Marshall or whether you want to say it's Jonathan Broxton, you've got guys who have had closer opportunities and some, ranges of success as closers. And the Reds have a chance to really shorthand a game. I think that's the whole idea of a good bullpen. The closer himself and all the awards you get for saves and so on. I mean, come on. I don't know who it was. Some media room the other day was showing me the stats of what it's been since the 1940s when the winning team is leading, the leading team going into the ninth inning wins 95% of the time.
Yeah.
And I think from that standpoint, closers are way overrated. But I'll tell you what's not overrated is that ballpark and the excitement in that ballpark when that bullpen door swings open in a tight game and a roll of Chapman comes out of left field onto the mound and the place is going nuts and the scoreboard's going nuts and they're shooting off fireworks. I mean, I've never seen that kind of excitement at a Cincinnati ballpark out about a closer ever. And I think that's a pretty cool thing to be around.
Yeah, it was kind of like Charlie Sheen in Major League.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost surreal sometimes.
Yeah,
I've been at other ballparks, where they brought in their star closers, you can name them. But it's people dig it, and it's part of the fun of being at the ballpark.
Yeah, but they do have a lot of money tied up in that bullpen now.
Well, they do, but it's not our money as a bill.
No, it's not yours or mine anyway. We wish we had that kind of money. So let's go on to the ball club, Chris. Does this team feel like it has something to prove after how last year ended?
I hope so. I hope that the expectations that the fans have put on this ball club don't act as an anchor and something too big. I think that they feel like that they were stunned last year by the Giants. You know, they went into that series thinking all you got to do is win one out of three. That's a horrible way to look at things because if you get out pitched your first game, then you get beaten in your second game. All of a sudden, you're so tight in the third game, you can't even make it to home plate. And I think that's what happened to him.
Yep.
So I think this year, the challenge for Dusty Baker and this ball club is to actually play games as hard as they did during the regular season that they did last year in order to get to the postseason. Yep. Because it's assumed that everybody around Reds country is assuming this team's going to win the division because they look like the best team on paper. But, a lot of things, you can throw a few shoes along the way or lose a few wheels, whatever you want to say, and all of a sudden it becomes a struggle. I hope that they're able to keep the same kind of focus this year as they did last year.
Let's talk about some individual players and things, Chris. Devin Mesoraco's had a great spring. How has he improved from last year?
I think he is back to where he was, to be honest with you, Bill. I mean, he's improved. The way he finished the year last year, I mean, he looked like he was lost. His confidence was gone. His confidence at the plate was gone. He got into bad catching habits behind the plate, how he set up, how he caught the balls, how he blocked balls, all those things that he had progressed past, he reverted to when he started losing his confidence last year. And I think he went back and he thought, you know what? I'm going to come into camp and be the guy that I can be. And, I mean, he's a tremendously talented young kid. Really strong, great strong arm, and I was just so happy to see him come ready to play the way he did. I think he earned his way on this ball club.
Do you have any thoughts on why he struggled last year? I mean, was it effort? Was there any lack of effort or work ethic or maturity, or did he just get into a bad slide and couldn't get out of it?
I think that's exactly what it it's not lack of effort, I'll tell you that. The kid works hard. In fact, this whole team works hard. They really do. But I think that you start losing your confidence, and then you start questioning things. And you're not sure whether, at some point you're not sure whether you're ever going to make solid contact on the ball again. So now you're behind home plate catching, one of the pitchers, and instead of having your mind completely into how you're going to set this hitter up and catch this pitcher and work the strategy and so on, some fleeting thoughts in your mind are, man, I'm third up next inning. What if I come up with a man on base and I don't drive him in? Will I get another start or not? So these things, I think what happened to Devin Mesoraco happens to a lot of players. They think about the what if instead of the what. Meaning, what if I strike out again with the bases loaded? What if I make the last out of the game? What if I throw this ball in the center field? And I think that it really eroded his confidence. But he came back and with a clean slate this spring. He's a good-looking player.
I read a quote by Joe Morgan in the offseason that said one of the things that may kind of hold up I didn't even think he was specifically talking about Devin, but he said it's tough for a young catcher on a team that's expected to be good to develop because the expectations of the team are so high. And also on this team, he's got Ryan Hannigan playing in front of him, who's just lights out on framing pitches and playing defense. Do you think these things could kind of set his development back a little bit?
Well, yeah, I think Joe Morgan's right on the beam. I think what he's trying to say there is that the catcher is supposed to be the go-to guy, the leader on the ball club. And when you have a young catcher and he's struggling a little bit, it's really tough. So now the guy goes out and tries harder and he makes some mistakes of aggression and so on. And I think that's a great point by Morgan. On the other hand, if you roll the clock back 3 years, Ryan Hamming's a nice catcher, but he was nowhere near what he is right now. So, he's made himself, he's like a self-made millionaire, Ryan Hannigan. He's made himself from a non-drafted, non-prospect into one of the best catchers in the league.
He's an amazing story. I mean, because, and I think you and I have talked about this before, because when you're in his position coming up through the organization, they don't have anything invested in you, and you don't really have anybody in your corner. I mean, he had to earn everything on his own to get to where he is. He's kind of an amazing story.
I love it, and you know what? He doesn't take anything for granted, even still. Now that you have Ryan Hannigan having reached the point in his career where he is, the question that I have would be, all right, how does Dusty Baker split up the playing time between these two? Last year, Hannigan caught the top three in the rotation. Mesoraco caught the bottom two. But now you've got the temptation of having Hannigan, who Homer Bailey's much better behind the plate with Hannigan behind, or on the mound with Homer. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Hannigan behind the plate, Homer is a better pitcher. At least he was last year. The temptation to run Hannigan out there 4 out of 5 days instead of playing only 60% of the time has got to be, very strong for Dusty Baker to resist. So it'll be interesting to see how the catching rotation goes. I don't think they're quite as concerned about developing Mesoraco this year as they are last year. I think this year they want to win, and that's going to be the primary goal every night.
What do you think of the idea of pitchers having as an ex-guy, what do you think of the idea of, I mean, because Hannigan has always been Arroyo's guy for years, but, what do you think of the idea of a personal catcher or guys, catching the same pitcher all the time? I mean, what are the pluses and minuses for that for the pitcher and for the catchers?
I think most pitchers like it. I mean, I think that they develop a kinship with a certain catcher, and they like him, and hopefully that he's the number one catcher. But bottom line is, I mean, I remember I was with, I think I was with the Expos, and Gary Carter, kind of rest his soul, he loved to call for fastballs with runners on base. And everybody in the league knew it. And I never had very much of a fastball. I had a hard time throwing to find those guys when they were looking for it. And I didn't want to throw it always with the man on first base. But he wanted to be able to throw the runners at me, see? So I kind of gravitated and say, hey, I'd like to have this backup catcher catching. that's not going to happen. Your number one guy's going to catch the majority of the time. So I think most pitchers have developed certain relationships with certain catchers. But the bottom line is that, you hope your catching core is good enough that everybody can be intermingled. Arroyo's a different guy. It started with David Ross being his personal catcher here in Cincinnati. and then it worked, you know, to Ryan Hannigan. If you remember, Greg Maddux had the same situation when he was in Atlanta, where he had a personal catcher. I think it was Eddie Perez, who wasn't the top line catcher then. So it's one of those things where, you know, there are certain times pitchers like to throw to certain guys, and hey, if it gives you an edge where he's going to throw more zeros on the board, maybe that'd be a good night to get the number one catcher night off.
I want to give you a chance to debunk something that kind of has flowed around the blogs, Chris, and that's that the front officer, Dusty Baker, lost confidence in Devin Mesoraco as a future number one catcher on this team after last year. Have you seen any emphasis on any sign of that?
You know, there's speculation about that. I mean, when you see a guy regress the way that Mesoraco did last year, and he did. I mean, there is just no, you know, you can't sugarcoat that. Yeah, I mean, if they had complete confidence that Mesoraco was going to come back and look as good as he did this spring, they wouldn't have brought in Miguel Olivo for a long look and a tryout. In fact, in the beginning of the camp, Olivo was getting all the innings in the A games. And it was Mesoraco that would come around as a backup guy, and he would catch the last few innings and mostly minor leaguers and play when everybody, you know, when double-A team was on the field. But he earned his way back on the ball club. So I think that, you know, it's not about losing confidence. It's about players showing you that they should have confidence in you. I mean, what has Devin Mesoraco ever done in the major leagues that everybody should automatically have confidence in him and that he should be okay from year in and year out? Listen, the sample size in the big leagues for him hasn't been big enough.
True.
Now, if he was a 5-year catcher and a 2-time All-Star, and then he had a bad year, and then your management loses confidence in you, then there may be an issue. But at this point, he hasn't earned it yet. It's up to Devin Mesoraco to come out and show everybody that he can play in the big leagues. And he hasn't done that over the course of his season yet. I hope he can. I think he can. But he's going to get that chance someday.
Yeah, I hope so, too, because he's a good kid. Let's move on to the pitching staff, Chris. Which Mike Leaker do you think we're going to see this year? The 2012 version, the 2011 version, or somewhere in between, or do you think he'll come back to where he was 2 years ago?
Yes and no. Mike Leaker is Mike Leaker. I think if any team out there could get anywhere close to 500 out of their number 5 starter or that fifth starter spot. I mean, it wasn't too long ago that the Reds, I think, ran 8 guys out there at the starter spot one season. So it's like one of the top guys from the Angels told me he came out to scout the Reds, and I asked him, you know, off the record, what do you think about this Chapman Leak thing? He said, Mike Leak's our fourth starter. We have a $200 million payroll. So there are a lot of teams out there that really like Mike Leak, and a lot of people out there that like Mike Leak, and I'm one of them. And I think the guy's going to win a lot of games. I think that he's another guy let me make this one comment. And I can tell you from experience, because I was a fifth starter. The fifth starting spot in the major leagues is the toughest job in sports to keep. And I say that because I go on the backfields in the minor league or in the spring training days, and I see him filled with probably 100 different pitchers. And guess whose job they're all looking at?
That number 5 guy.
They know they cannot pitch Johnny Cueto, and they're not on a long-term deal like Latos or Arroyo, and they don't have the stuff that Homer Bailey does, most of them don't. And he's throwing no hitter in the big leagues. But when they look at Mike Leake, they think, hey, my stuff's as good as his, and I got a chance to be a number 5 starter. So every year, unless he goes out and wins 20 games, Mike Leake is going to be battling for a job on the staff, just like every other fifth starter is every time they show up in spring training. So I think that a poor guy gets over-scrutinized a little bit because of the location he is in the rotation.
Do you think the Chapman situation puts any extra pressure on him to perform?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that, you know, they brought some other pitchers in camp that, you know, looked pretty good. Armando Galarraga looked pretty good. He's going to be down in AAA. Tony Cingrani didn't look that great in spring training A games, but, you know, he's coming on. You know, you got to battle to keep your spot. I mean, the only thing harder than making it through the major leagues is staying there. And I think Leak is figuring that out. But Leak's a smart guy. I like his arm action. I like the action on his ball. When he goes to the lineup and he's working it right, I mean, he makes it look awfully easy. And I think that the guy can be a generic Greg Maddux. And all he has to do is really concentrate on moving the ball around and hitting the spot. He'll be just fine.
Let's move into the bullpen, Chris. I mean, it looks like we've got, what, 5 guys vying for 3 spots. Hoover, Andrusic, Simon, Arredondo, and Parra. Who do you think is going to make the team?
Well, I think Parra's going to make the team based on the fact that they'd like to have another lefty. He's a big leaguer. They can't send him out without his permission. And I can guarantee you that there's a bunch of other clubs who have put Manny Parra on their team right now in the bullpen. And the Reds will always there. So I think that Parra's out. I don't think I think J.J. Hoover has pitched his way out of the ball club. Bruce has to pick up here towards the end of part of spring training. This may end up getting him optioned out. And I think Simon's on the team too, based on what he did last year. Arredondo is the interesting guy to me, to be honest with you. I keep hearing the rumors that they like to trade him, that there's too many guys for the number of positions they have, and Arredondo is the one guy that, maybe they could trade and get something for and free up a spot. Because I do know that he makes me nervous on the mound, for goodness sake. Doesn't he walk the first guy he faces every time just out of habit? But he usually comes through and gets the job done, and he's one of those white knuckle pitchers, where it's not always pretty, but he usually puts up some pretty good numbers.
He's
going to make the team. I don't know what he expects of him.
Arredondo's also unusual, and he's got that weird reverse split, too, where he's better against left-handers than he is against right-handers.
Well, it is, yeah. I mean, so you ask yourself, do you keep Parra or Arredondo to get left-handers out?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of what it comes down to, really.
Yeah.
They're both big league pitchers, and you both have a chance to lose them if you don't keep them on the roster. So it's a tough decision. I wouldn't be surprised to see some kind of a trade made here, between now and opening day.
Yeah, and to let everybody know, Chris and I are talking on Friday evening. Chris, let's move out to the biggest addition to the ball club this year, Shin-Sen Chu, who I've loved this guy for years in Cleveland. Tell me your impressions about this guy.
I love this guy, too. I mean, you know what? If I didn't know better, I would have thought he was raised in Cincinnati. And because he plays like a kid who comes through Cincinnati youth baseball. I mean, he plays hard-nosed baseball. He gets after it. He's just a solid guy. He really is. He told me that when he came over here to the States to play, he was taught, like most Asian hitters, to kind of swing and run at the same time. The Ichiro type of, and most of the Japanese and Korean players we've seen are hitters that do that. And he realized early on that he wasn't going to be that kind of player, that he wanted to stay in the batter's box. So he taught himself how to hit American style. And this guy's a real smart guy. He really is very smart. He's got a good grasp of the English language. He understands baseball. He understands what pitchers are trying to do for him. And he's been an athlete to play center field without any problem at all. So I think it's a terrific pickup. I mean, I was so excited when I saw that trade being made. And I said that this is, even if you have him only for 1 year, this is just going to be the dynamite season for him.
Tell us what he brings to this team offensively, Chris.
Well, he brings power in the number one spot. He brings an on-base monster, when you just look at his numbers of getting on base. And I just love the way he works the count. I see things in Chu that I haven't seen in Reds leadoff hitters in recent history. I mean, look at the guys we've had up there. He's struggling to try to get on base. Drew Stubbs, Corey Patterson, Willie Taveras. I mean, man, we're tearing our hair out watching these guys play, aren't we? And now you finally got somebody who not only can get on base, but you make a mistake and the guy is going to hit it into a river. He is that powerful. This guy is a player. And I'm just tickled to death he's wearing a red jean for him.
It makes you wonder how many RBIs Joey Votto could have this year.
I hope so. Votto, it's funny. We talk about RBIs and production and what he's paid to do and this and that. Votto doesn't look at it like that. Votto just doesn't want to make outs.
Yep.
And he's really reduced the game of baseball to where the great players are able to do it, which is, you know, I just want to be, give myself the feeling that at every at bat I'm doing myself justice by the way I go through that at bat. You know, not give in to the pitcher, not get myself out early and count a bad pitch. And if it results in an out, it results in an out. But by God, I'm going to battle in there and I'm going to hit the ball hard somewhere. And, then he counts up the RBIs at the end of the year. But I think that Bob Miller from the front office did some calculations and told me on the Reds caravan this year that based on everything they figured out, that if Chu has a typical year, Joey Votto is going to have 100 more guys on base ahead of him than he did in the previous lineups.
I think I read that in the last 2 or 3 years, I think it was, that there have been more no-hitters thrown than Joey Votto pop-ups.
in the infield, I think he's only popped up twice in 2 years, right?
That's what I'm saying, you know. Chris, what impresses you the most about Votto? Is it how much he thinks about the game or something else?
It's for me, it's his approach and his work habits. And there are a lot of guys that work hard, but I've never seen anybody work like Joey Votto. I mean, it is unbelievable. It's amazing that guys sometimes can take the field without having worn himself completely to the bone. He takes more ground balls than anybody else. He takes more soft-softs than anybody else. He's got his own routine. He is completely in the zone when he's at practice for baseball. A lot of guys need comic relief during a practice because they can't focus and stay intense as long as a guy like Votto can. And Votto stays intense from the time he takes the field in batting practice or in fielding practice until the end of the game. And a lot of guys are taking mental breaks along the way, but that's just Votto's way of getting ready. I think the way he practices is the thing that makes me most impressed about him. I mean, and I don't know if you ever heard the term deep practice, but it applies to Votto more than any player I've ever seen.
Well, and I think a prime example of this is when he came up, he was not known as a very good defensive player. They said, that he wasn't a real good first baseman, and he's turned himself into a gold glove caliber, and he won a gold glove, but a gold glove caliber first baseman.
Drafted as a catcher. They tried him a third. That wasn't going to work. They tried him in left field. And you're right. Even his first couple of years at first base weren't all that great. But he's gotten steadily better and better and better. And the guy makes the plays, man. I mean, and he's got a good idea about that. We were able to get with him a few times this spring and have him do some of those instructional pep talks that we do.
Oh, good.
And he articulates himself about defense at first base as well as any first baseman I ever had on that show.
Let's move out to left field, Chris. Let's talk about Ryan Ludwig. Is it a reasonable expectation to think he can repeat his numbers from last year?
It's reasonable if you're a Reds fan and you hope that to happen. I mean, I read all the Sabre guys are saying, oh, he's the most likely to have a regression. That might happen. I don't know. I mean, he's kind of had you look at his career numbers year by year, and it's a roller coaster.
Yeah.
You hope that he's in shape and hits a high point. I'll tell you what, you can't find a better teammate than Ryan Ludwig. And the guy may not be the most fearsome cleanup hitter in the league, but I think he fits on this ball club because of who he is and how he is, and he's got the kind. He's like the comic relief that they need. Is he going to put the best numbers up of any cleanup hitter in the league? No. Would I rather have, fill in the blank, Mike Trout?
Yeah.
Well, come on. But I mean, I think that he's a good fit for this ball club. I do.
If he did struggle and they felt like they needed to make a change in the lineup, now I'm not saying take him out of the starting lineup, but if they made it a switch in the order, what do you think plan B would be for the four slot?
I think he'd probably see back-to-back lefties with Jay Bruce.
You think Dusty finally give in?
Well, only because he has to. But I think the one thing that you have this year with the addition of Chu giving you more balance, that you got more to worry. When you only have two lefties in the lineup, and it was Votto and Bruce, then you had to split them up because it was too easy down the road to feed into the strength of the opposing bullpen. But when you've got another left-hander in the lineup with Chu, when you turn the lineup over, it gives the manager a little bit more the difficulty trying to spot those lefties up. And I know Dusty doesn't like to do that. I mean, he's complete opposite of Bobby Cox. Bobby Cox could care less. He'd have put five lefties in a row. It wouldn't have made any difference to him. But, I think that probably Bruce would be the guy. And I don't know, beyond that, maybe Todd Frazier if he gets hot. What you look at, Bill, I think with guys who aren't your superstar players, is that they play a six-month season and they give you 3 to 4 months of real good baseball and 2 months of not that great baseball.
Yeah,
it's up to the manager to figure out when he's giving me his best baseball. That's where I want to put him in a spot where he can do the most damage.
You mentioned Todd Frazier, and with Scott Rowland gone now, how do you think it kind of takes the pressure off of Todd or puts more pressure on him as the everyday guy at third base now?
I don't think he feels pressure. I think it'd be more pressure if Rowland was around. I do. I think he's settled into it. He plays unorthodox everything. I mean, at least according to the book. You know what I mean? The instruction book. I mean, he's not the slickest looking fielder, but he normally gets the job done. He bars his left arm when he gets ready to swing the bat, but he, remarkably gets hits on pitches that other guys couldn't even make contact on. And he's a strong kid, and he's driven. And I think that this is the kind of thing, again, that reminds you that you're playing a game of human beings when you look at a guy like Todd Frazier. And I hate to sell him short because I think he's really got it in his heart.
Didn't he hit one out last year that he threw the bat at the ball?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about the team as a whole for a couple minutes, Chris. Give me one or two keys for the Reds' success this year.
Well, they've got to stay healthy. I mean, they don't have to stay as healthy from the starting rotation as they did last year, but they've got to stay healthy. I don't think they recover from the loss of, say, Joey Votto this year the way they did last year. They have to make sure that they don't read their own press clippings and that they don't think that they're as great as they appear on paper. But I think the one thing that will help them in that respect is that you have two on a one-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
I always think it's nice to have somebody in their walk year or on a one-year deal in your ball club because you get everybody kind of fat and happy with contracts. It's hard to get that extra motivation going. I think that the other thing is that they just don't panic. I mean, if they lose a few games and they begin to struggle like they did last April, don't worry about it. This team is big enough to be able to make it up as they come around. But I think I don't have any big worries about this team other than, them staying healthy.
Yeah, because their schedule is pretty rough in April. I mean,
it is. I mean, you play the Cardinals 6 times, all in San Luis. Of course, you play the Phillies, you play the Nationals, you play
the Angels.
Starting off with the Angels.
Yeah.
But you also pick up the Cubs in the slot there, I think, in April. And Miami is in the slot as well in April. You have a couple of teams that aren't supposed to be any good, and they won't be any good. But you've got some good teams. So it'll be a good test for this ball club right away. I think that you're going to see, I think what I really like about this team is that you're going to see the starting pitching even better this year than last year. I think Latos is on the verge of a really good year. Based on what I've seen in spring training, I think Cueto was always driven. I think the guy, as long as he stays healthy, is going to be just fine. And Homer Bailey, to me, doesn't even resemble the same person he did 2 years ago. I mean, he's a man now.
You feel like Homer's really turned the corner?
He's turned the corner physically, and I think the second half of last year really helped him. And I also think that having Hannigan behind the plate helped him a lot last year. So it'll be interesting to see how they match the catcher up with Homer Bailey. But I think Homer Bailey is I don't think there's a team out there that wouldn't love to have him as a number four starter.
And he killed a lion with a bow and arrow, for gosh sakes.
Yeah, I I don't know whether that's heroic or
insane,
or,
right?
Or decadent. Yeah. But, I don't know how they do that.
Something just occurred to me, Chris, and I wanted to jump back for a second. When you brought up Chu only being on the one-year deal, did you get a look at Billy Hamilton out there?
Yeah.
What were your thoughts?
He's fast.
Yeah. I mean, do you think he could be ready next year?
I never played against Vince Coleman in the minor leagues. I played against Ricky Henderson in the minor leagues. I played with Ricky in winter ball. I played against Ricky in the major leagues then, and then I played against Vince, and I played with Willie McGee as a minor leaguer with the Yankees. So I that's kind of the view that I've seen a lot of these really speedsters, early on. Nobody was like Ricky Henderson. But I think that Billy reminds me a little bit more of maybe the batting style of Vince Coleman a little bit more than the rest of those guys. But what I really like about him is his confidence on the base paths. I mean, he really believes nobody is going to keep him from getting to the next bag.
Yeah, he can turn a single into a triple in a hurry.
Yeah, and what we can, we were able to do some of these pep talk things with Billy Hamilton and talk about his strategy and so on, it's amazing. I mean, when you see him, I mean, he's dancing off first base. He is daring the pitcher to throw over. And he's telling the guy in body language, I'm going the first time you throw the plate, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, the fast.
The same thing that Vince Coleman did. It's the same thing that Willie McGee did from time to time. And you just knew it in your heart that was going to happen. And I think the kid's going to be an impact player in the major leagues as long as he can keep those legs healthy.
Yeah, I saw him quite a bit at Dayton 2 years ago. And the only guy that I ever saw that was even in his ballpark in terms of speed going from like first to third was Deion Sanders.
Yeah. But he loves the game, too. That's the other thing I like about that. He's a humble kid. He loves the game. He was very happy and just humbled to be up with the big league club this year. It's not one of these kids that comes on the scene thinking that, the game of baseball owes him something. He's not like that at all. And I'll tell you, what a great song that he was.
Chris, this team won 97 games last year. Can they win 97 games this year?
If they have to, they can. I don't think they'll have to. I think they probably only need to win 92 or 93. I'd rather see them win 90 games than win more in the playoffs. I think that this team, what they did last year is they won when they had to win, and I think that they still can do that. I really think that they believe in themselves. And I can tell you, Bill, from talking to other scouts and other front office operatives and GMs and so on, there are a lot of people that really think this ball club is just loaded. I mean, that they are just solid through and through. And when you hear that from other baseball people, in years past, you always say, well, you guys are good except for, any name, two or three names or a couple of areas. This year, it's like, man, you got depth everywhere. We haven't even talked about some of the backup guys who can play. And if they stay healthy and stay on the right course, and Dusty Baker's able to make him play one game at a time. It's so trite, I hate to say it, but you got to do it. You got to go out. You got to go after that inning and win every inning. And that's what they did last year. That's why they won that set.
Well, the only I'm not going to ask you for a prediction, Chris, because that could happen. We'll just say that we want to be playing after the season's over. But if you were a betting man, would you bet on Joey Votto to be an MVP again this year?
I bet on him being in the running. I don't see a better pure hitter in baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'll tell you what. I saw Mike Trout play a few games, but maybe a better way to ask that, Bill, or for me to look at it is, all right, if I'm making a draft pick of the first player I want starting a team, it's a short list of guys who are going to be on that list.
Yeah.
Money aside, say I'm going to have the guy for 10 years and I can afford him, whatever the money is. Who is it? And Votto's got to be one of the guys you're going to consider.
Absolutely.
And that's the reason he's so valuable to this team. I mean, numbers are one thing. I mean, I, I'd like to crunch them with everybody else. You know, I'm a little bit challenged when it comes to doing math in public, but I like to read about that stuff. And I understand where it's coming from, and I believe in a lot of the trends and the inside formulas they use and so on. But I think that when I see the best player on your team working harder than anybody I've ever seen, I've been around the game a long time, man, that shows me something. And that's the way he leads. He's no rah-rah guy, but he leads by example. And I'll tell you what, he'd be one of my first picks. I hate the fact that the players are giving 10 or 12-year contracts, but if you got to give one to somebody, Bobby's the man to give it to.
Well, Chris, I know you and I both still live in the Cincinnati area, and we both know how excited the city is and ready for opening day on Monday. So we're going to wrap up now. I'm going to let you go, and hopefully we can get together later on in the season.
I hope so, Bill. Thanks a lot for visiting with you.
You too, Chris. Thanks for your time. Thank you.